Welcome, everybody. Christian Marauder here. I heard that many enjoyed last week's show, and I'm so glad you're joining today. But before we begin, I gotta say something that the media giants are really getting downright hostile. I mean, I've never seen anything quite like this in my life. I had another friend of mine get the YouTube ban and axe, and I have a, you know, and I saw another report where a veterans organization is fighting to Facebook because they removed their page because they mentioned the word Christian. It's amazing, folks, what's going on out there. So that's why I want to say a big thank you to Josh Peck for starting the Renegade Nation, where you can still find this really awesome content here. Man, I got to tell you, where can you get the Christian Contrarian and Apollo Nearing and the other fine people that are on this station? I tell you, those guys are great. I got to tell you, you can't get good content like this. And then if you say anything wrong, you know, on the social media, you get the axe, man. I tell you. So that's why I thank Josh Peck for starting the Renegade Nation, so we can find this great content and not be worried about getting ourselves axed. So please, I'm going to ask you to please consider this, to join up to the Renegade Nation, $10 a month or $100 a year by selecting the link below, so that you won't feel that you're left out when things start going dark, because we have to find alternative media sources. I even in contact with somebody who's going back to shortwave radio, and we actually broadcast live into China and be able to preach the gospel to the underground church there. But there, I mean, we might have to do that here in our own countries, man. I tell you, it's getting hostile out there. With that, let me just jump right into today's message. This is part two, called The Old Gods Break Out. The old gods break out. That's tonight's message, folks. Hope you enjoyed last week's show, because we're doing a series, and this is part two of the series, The Old Gods Are Back series. And I hope you enjoyed that last show we did on the Book of Revelations, and just to show you how the old gods work. So we're actually going to step back today from the Book of Revelation and then jump back into it the next time I'm back on the air with you guys again. So hallelujah. I look forward to that. Well, for starters, you know, I just got to tell you something. For starters, I got to tell you just who these old gods are, because I failed to tell you that last time. Most of the people on Pecs on a Renegade Nation are very intelligent people who know about Nephilim and giants and who the old gods are. But some of you who are just joining probably have no clue who these are. So, for starters, they're not gods in the sense of being a big god or a bunch of gods, but rather they're the fallen watchers and angels that mentioned in the book of Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 through 10. Just like the pseudo-apocrypha books, Jasher says, taught the mixing of different species one to another, one against another, okay? And first Enoch, let's see, chapter 6 through 10 or 12, I think it is, that adds further insights with Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, that these are fallen angels that made the Nephilim giants, put it together with Jasher by mixing different species together. And Jesus said, as in the days of Noah, so will it be in one of the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And so we're seeing that fulfilled now with all the DNA stuff out there. These fallen angels were punished, just as Jude says in Jude 1:6. And the angels who did not keep their proper domain but left their abode, he has reserved in the day of everlasting change and under darkness for the judgment of the great day. The pseudo-apocrypha books, I gotta tell you folks, are not canon, but they are quoted in the Bible, nevertheless, like some reference footnote that we would use. So God doesn't make mistakes. So he left those books in there. They're not canon. Don't get all, so I got some hate mail last time I taught on a different type of show this, and they were saying, oh, you can't use these books. Oh, well, they're reference tools. In fact, they're quoted in the book of Joshua when the sun stands still, because it quotes Jasher, the book of Jasher, emphatically. The book of Enoch is quoted in the Bible as well. And the book of Jubilees is quoted, and nothing is done by mistake. I want to give you an example. That first Enoch chapter 6, verses 2 through 7, I'm going to read some selected verses here, to show you who these old gods are. They're actually fallen angels, watchers. And it correlates to Genesis chapter 6. And it explains why these fallen watchers or angels were punished. And the angels and the children of heaven saw and lusted after the women of Adam, okay? And they said, come, let us choose wives who are among the children and beget us children. And Shemaziah, who was their leader, said unto them, I fear ye will not indeed agree to do this deed, for and I alone will have to pay the penalty for this great sin. And they all answered and said, let us swear an oath, and all bind ourselves by mutual imprecations, not to abandon this plan, but do this thing. And in verse 6 it jumps down, and there were 200 who descended in the days of Jared on the summit of Mount Hermon, and they call it Mount Hermon because they sworn and bound themselves by an oath, sort of like a blood oath. It is an oath of allegiance. They were not going to back out of it. And I got to tell you, this is Jesus Christ is absolutely correct in this. In Matthew chapter 12, he states that the kingdom of Satan is not divided. Because it was divided, it could not stand. And as Enoch Help explains they were bound by mutual oaths. Described as the captains of 10, okay? In the book of Enoch, it talks about the 200 watchers being captains of 10. So there were just a lot more. These were the leaders. This was a military hierarchy coming down for a reason and purpose. If you research it, basically they were here to teach humanity civilization skills, and they fell. I'm just paraphrasing a lot of stuff here. And it looks like Paul was describing his military chain of command, I call it, in Ephesians 6:10. I call this the Ephesians 6:10 crowd, folks. There's despotic principalities along with their powers who oversee their empires, with their rulers of darkness along with their spiritual hosts of wickedness. It's like a military chain of command to do some really bad things to the sons of men and daughters of men. As we go further into this series, we're going to see how 10% of the 200 captains of 10s mentioned in 1st Enoch were allowed to remain and not go into the abyss, because that's pointed out in Jubilees chapter 10 verses 1 and 2. I know I'm quoting a lot of these apocrypha books here, but just bear with me. It all makes sense. We're going to pack it all together. Right now, I'm trying to help you. If you just don't know anything about Nephilim giants or anything, I'm just trying to catch you up who the watchers are. They're not exactly, they're not gods, even though in the Bible, I'll share this. In the Old Testament, right around the first, when the Torah was written, and Moses went in there, when I did the research, there was about 8,200, 500 or 600 Hebrew words total. Our English has over 300, close to 400,000 words now. So you have 8,000 words, so you would use words that would sound the same in different phrases, but you would understand what they mean. And so one of them was the sons of God, meaning the angels, the watchers, the angels who were assigned that God came and created. They're created beings. They're not gods, but they came to earth, corrupted humanity, and wanted to be worshipped as gods. So they became the false gods, the Baals and the Azeroths and all that you read in your Bible. So that's who we're dealing with here. And you need to know this, because the old gods are mentioned, like I said, like Azeroth, Baal, whose history is better preserved, I like to say, in the Mesopotamian pantheon, made up of 7 top despotic principalities, seen as the 7 who decree fates and teach humanity things, and who have a hierarchy, a second and third and fourth in command, and it's called in a family structure. These are neither, they're not gender. the female represents, if you understand it, second in command, and the sons and daughters second, a different command structure, chain of command, military. Think military, not family. These are not crime families, folks, who are fighting for each other. These are bound by oath to do something, to deconstruct God's order and earth in order to put theirs in it, and it's not going to be in a very nice place. These military formations, I tell you, look at these as military formations. You can see the symbols they use. They use bulls, serpents, scorpions, owls, dragons, stars, planets, lions, leopards, bears. You see some of those in the prophetic scriptures, like in Daniel, they saw a beast, they saw like a bear, they saw a leopard. And you begin to understand who these these false gods are, this military hierarchy, is by identifying their military formations, who are identified like any military does, through symbols. The United States Army has the Screaming Eagle, so there you go. That's why it's important, you know, to really understand this stuff, because we are actually engaged in a spiritual war. And these entities are back, and they are on the counterattack. And I shared some of that, how to identify that, in last week's message concerning the first three churches of the Book of Revelation. And we're going to get into the Book of Revelation a little bit more later, but right now, I got to tell you, the church is by and large asleep. So I'm going to just jump right into today's message. I just gave you a brief overview of who the gods are. So bear with me, because I want to tell you a little bit about myself, where I come from. We're going to jump right into this thing, folks. Because in my professional field, I worked in the criminal justice field. I worked inside of correctional facilities. I worked inside of jails. I worked with violent criminal types and sex offenders as a case manager as well, outside of the jail. I took people's rights away. I had to write their personal profiles, and I had to document. I had to do research, and all this stuff that I learned, I never thought I would apply it to studying the old gods. And it's important to find out something when you study the old gods. It's just like it is in a correctional facility. You have to find out who the instigator is in a housing area. We call them pods. By noting a certain pattern of behavior of inmates that they stir up to do things. It's guaranteed you can pinpoint them, and once you know who it is, because these instigators stay in the background. They're very quiet and silent, and they have a big bubba there who will be more boisterous and so forth, etc. Then they have other people who act out and get things that they need from the guards to deconstruct the order of the jail, to bring chaos into it, just like the old gods. And so they try to deconstruct the correctional environment, and they try to gain control. This instigator hides behind the strong guy. He hides behind another guy who stirs the pot to win allies. And there's the fall guy who does the deeds to get in trouble and go to lockdown a lot. And the others who act out in clever schemes to gain advantages, and they end up taking control. I mean, not taking over the pod, but they have a psychological control, and it gets very dangerous inside those housing areas, let me tell you. Once the instigator is identified, and I had to identify many of them, you get rid of that instigator and you remove him, you have order restored in the pod, and you bring order back in, and the deconstruction and the chaos is gone. Well, I gotta tell you, folks, the old gods, the fallen angels, are like criminals. They have criminal minds. They hide behind each other. The problem that happens is when we study who's who regarding these old pagan gods, aka these fallen angels, folks, and their demon minions or armies, is that few understand how the criminal mind works. Unless you came from and studied this like I did in college, but I learned most of it on the job training, as well as training from the sheriff's department, okay? And so I understand how the criminal mind works, and I see it in the pagan gods. And with this understanding of the old gods, I mean, with this mindset of this correctional background, you can see clearly how these operate, and that you can do a nice little personal profile on them. And for me, I can see them clearly from my training. And I like to share that perspective from you, which is going to be quite different. And I don't know many people have ever done this yet, using their correctional and their sheriff department training to how to identify criminal types. Okay. How to identify the instigator to bring peace in a pod. So this applies to the old gods. In the Mesopotamian pantheon, there are seven who decree, and they go by the names Anu, Enlil, Enki, Ninshirhag, Nana, Iana, and Utu. Iana is known as Ishtar, okay? And Nana is the moon god, and Utu is Shamash. It's actually Shamash, which is Utu, the sun god. And they match the personality profile of the seven primordial gods too, so I kind of combined the two, because they do. I was trained to skillfully do personal, you know, like personality profiles. That's what we call them. These personality profiles on sex offenders in order to prepare them for courts and judges. Okay. That's what I did. And I had to do it also with violent criminal types. So I'm going to apply this into the story of called The Big Jailbreak, using the characters that correlate to the basic personality profiles of the seven Mesopotamian gods who decree, who teach fates and behaviors in the context of so that you guys can understand it in the form of a story. And you know the story, folks. You know the big house, the slammer, the correctional facility, you know, where people go when they do something bad and they're locked up. Well, this guy came up with a plan to take over the jail and break out. And it was being made by an instigator, a highly intelligent master schemer who hangs out unseen in the background and silently is in charge of one of the housing areas. He's very hard to spot, very difficult to nail down, because he seems kind of aloof and not really there sometimes. And I'm going to call him names. His name is going to be called Brains Anu. He's the guy no one pays attention to. Why? We're going to find out more in a moment, I got to tell you. Anu's scheme is to deconstruct the order of the jail, leading a facility-wide riot and leading to a breakout with him in charge with this grandiose idea that he can take over the world. Sounds like how the old pagan gods think, right? To do this, Brains Anu hides behind six other personality types to hatch his plan. And then the first is Big Bubba. He's known as Enlil. It's Big Bubba Enlil. He is a verbiose. He's a big bull of a man. He's tough. He's mean and he's dominant. He hates kids. He's very verbiose. He hates kids and he likes dogs. You know, go figure. If you know the guy in jail. You know this guy. You see him in movies, right? If you make friends with Bubba, everything's okay. Cross him, it's not so good. If disobey, he makes your life very stormy. Bubba is bossy. He has a heavy, mean look out of his left eye. He appears first as a nice guy to hide his troublemaking side. He is nice one moment, he turns violent the next. He's extremely chauvinistic, he's extremely opinionated, he's given over to violent anger, and he's governed by suspicion. He fears the loss of power, he fears the loss of control, and he seeks, guess what, to devour any foes that come along his way. This is Enlil, a.k.a. known as Saturn, who's known as Kronos, and a bunch of others, whose personality trait I just described, but I'll add a few more, that he devours children, like Moloch in the Bible. He's a mean hombre, I want to tell you folks, he works very hard at deconstructing the family unit of humanity. He devours and abuses children. He promotes that. He promotes power trips to make others powerless against his abusive rule. He's stormy. He's capricious. He's sold out totally on Anu's diabolical plan to deconstruct God's existing order. Why? Because they signed an oath on Mount Hermon. He's like the guy that's like, okay, I'm going to be top dog in Anu's kingdom when he conquers the world. So by this oath, he gets a benefit. Thus, for enforcing the will of Anu, Bubba becomes big top dog there, okay? Now let's get back to the breakout story. Bubba has a sidekick. He's known as Yes Man. You heard me right, Yes Man. His name is Ninlil. And Ninlil, Yes Man, goes around showing off that he's Bubba's friend. He's enforcing Bubba's will and recruiting those that can further the plan on how best to victimize the guard so they can be bribed for the things needed for the breakout. This step begins the first phase to deconstruct a jail system, that environment. The real Ninlil, for example, was once a he. He changed into a female to attract Enlil. And remember, the female represents the second in command. It's really not a gender thing here. It is a second in command. Got to think of this as military. And Ninlil is a storm god like Enlil. I think Ninlil is the north storm of the north wind, and one of them is the south wind. I can't remember which one is which. And it's a, and it and considers itself to be a mother of gods. And he's, this one is an enabler who enables people to be abused and taken advantage of. Remember, if you know Bubba, I'm Bubba's friend. You better give me your commissary, you know. So he's all about enforcing Enlil's will. And you gotta, according to this ancient Babylonian lore, Enlil was actually, saw Ninlil, and they raped Ninlil, who dressed like a woman, and so forth, etc. And, but Ninlil remained faithful and always looking for loyal followers and more victims for Enlil to use. So let's get back to the story. With this yes man, Ninlil looks for the weakest guards. He works them up. And guess what he does? He goes also about the pot area, feeling out who's going to be loyal to Bubba and Anu that sits in the background, who's actually pulling all the strings, but nobody pays attention to, in order to gain control for this great breakout. And this, we see a new player come into the field, because another friend of Anu, Bubba, and Ninlil here, Yes Man, is a guy named Wise Man. Wise Man Inki, he's a smart guy. He likes to tell secrets and find out secrets. And he likes to spread them around in a controlled fashion. He knows how to work up emotional support. He knows how to win inmates, other inmates to the plan. How he does this, he gets drugs into the jail by first collecting all the intel that he can get on a guard. And he finds out which guards are going to be the easiest to bribe. He has others come up, as his buddies that he hangs out with, will come up and start playing the guards to see who if they can be bribed or not. Then he, if a guard is too tough and doesn't want to be bribed or whatever, he moves the inmates to file endless and endless complaints about any tough guards, knowing that the correctional facility system will move that guard to another housing area so you don't get any trouble. See, I did work in a correctional facility. I know the game, okay? Now, Wise Man, Inki, is vocal about the latest things. He just knows everything. He knows everything in culture. He knows everything in politics. He's a good talker. He always has a new revelation to share. And he makes everybody feel really, really good about themselves. I tell you, he does. The guards begin to let down their guard, and they give too much personal information about family, friends, and personal desires and wants. Too much intel is given to him. Then he passes this on to this other guy that's in on it, the other of the top six here. His name is Moonbeam. You heard me right. Moonbeam. Nana, the moon god. Moonbeam. He's a control freak, but he's the best planner in the bunch. He has contacts on the outside that can be used to help facilitate a guard's compliance. One of the two guards, they found out, begins to think it's okay to mix the will of the inmates into their own will so they can manage the inmates better by being their friends. You know, you see kind of this attitude in churches a lot, that God is for you. Your best days are ahead. God wants you to be prosperous. Everything's rosy and cozy and posy and da da da. So I gotta ask a question. And before you can ask it, who's this Inki guy? Who's this Inki guy? Well, Inki's personality profile summed up, and I'm gonna go through this quickly. He's a good talker. He's full of wisdom, willing to share about witchcraft, the occult, new religions, and create new religions, new political ideas. He produces a cultic experience that actually feel well-being. The Kundalini Awakening is one of his allies, one of his legion's works. I researched this, I know what I'm talking about. He cunningly sways scientists to mix species together and create a perfect human being for a perfect utopia. Theirs, and teaches that having sex with anything is okay, and seeks to open the portals of hell upon the earth as the means to deconstruct God's order by putting witchcraft, occult, new religions, blah blah blah. You got the story, right? And this Wise Man Inki, he collects data with the help of Brain Anu's cellmate, who's known as, guess what, Chaos Maker. That is Nin Sherhag, who appears as a sympathetic old grandmother. Both he and Wise Man know that drugs and money are desperately needed to help out the cause to ensure winning the inmates over to the plan that the brain Anu has for this big breakout. So Chaos Maker, or Chaos Man, sends the supply list to the wise guy, Inky, who is also a scrounger. You know, after all, he is a goatfish. He likes to live at the bottom, bottom of the water, is like an old catfish, okay? He's a scrounger. Soon the cell block, after they get the drugs in, is all high and very happy, and all the inmates are won over to the plan. He does that in the church. Isn't that nice? And he manipulated two of the guards to smuggle all the happy stuff into, and he gives it and passes it off to, who guess who? Chaos Maker. And Chaos, so he doesn't want to get caught with the goods, so he has to kind of transfer it to the other guy, because this is how they work. They walk by each other and have some drugs, and in the hallway, and they'll pass it off quicker than anything you can ever see. And so when they get patted down in the cell, they won't have the stuff on them. So it passes off to another inmate who can hide it better. And one who can hide it better was Chaos Maker. And what he does is he can distribute to each pod, because he's like a trustee kind of guy. And he can teach others how to make items for war, like shanks, for the coming chaos. On the outside of the pod, everything looks happy and content, but that's a ploy to hide the plot from the warden and the guards that there's a plan, a breakout coming. So let's take a step back for a second and look at Chaos Maker, Nin Sherhag. This is the old crone of the triple goddess worship known as the Evil Grandmother, as I nicknamed her. If angered, makes chaos real. Just real, makes life miserable. He's the author of spreading vice and iniquity to all humanity. It teaches her daughter, Ninlil, to do that. And their granddaughter, or the great-granddaughter, or whatever it is, Ishtar, to do the same thing. The triple goddess. And so they spread this evil around, just like Azazel did. I find it amazing that the personality profile kind of matches Azazel's and Enoch. This is evil grandmother. This is the grandmother, or also a mother of the gods, who, if angered, creates chaos through envy, jealousy, deception. It's an expert on manipulation of money as to motivate greed and how to, you know, use the money to the guard, so to speak, from an outside source that'll bring in drugs to the people in the pod. Expert on the art of war and making weapons and the art of seduction too. That matches Azazel's profile on how he began the deconstruction of Yahweh's original order. But he was sent to the abyss for it, just as first Enoch, let's see, chapter 8, verses 1, 2, 3, 4, somewhere around there. And just like he was assigned to the abyss in Duadel, the place of jagged stone, which is symbolic of the abyss. And it's strange that this chaos monster called Tiamat, one of the primordial seven, is just like Nin Hersag, just like a.k.a. Leviathan. That's who I call Tiamat. It's a.k.a. Leviathan. Azazel, Tiamat, Leviathan, and Nin Hersag, one of the same, as according to my research, who lives in the abyss till an appointed time. And the book of Job, chapter 40, warns you don't want to stir this one up. You don't want to stir evil grandmother up. Now let's get back to this jailbreak. No one noticed the instigator, Brains Anu. Instead, they all see Bubba, the big boisterous Bubba, and his sidekick Ninlil doing their thing. And they tolerate old Wise Man Inky and Chaos Nin Sersag because Wise Man appears to have tamed Chaos. And thus appears there's peace in the valley in the jail. And all the inmates suddenly are in a good mood. All happy. Because they got something for the exchange. They got something to be able to carry out this plan. Meanwhile, all this is going on, there's Moonbeam, Nana, who sends for his buddy, Star Diana, who flipped gender. Star is a seducer and knows how to make things seem desirable and permissible. This one can charm and win you over. He makes merchandise out of you and has you enjoy it. But inside has war in the heart and wants all the guards dead. And this being is an excerpt at PSYOPs. and it's war against the guard. So what does Star do? Star hits on one of the guards by seducing them by playing on these. Well, you have it so bad. It's too bad about your marriage not working out like that. The officers really don't appreciate you. Did you see what they just did to you? Then he seduces and hooks a guard that they are the lovers destined to be together. But this jail thing, buddy, is just getting in the way. Help me get out. I need this and you to do that. And have this person send money to this person. Have this car ready at a certain time. And if you snitch, we'll tell that you smuggled the drugs in to the boys and there'll be a war in jail. And you don't want that because I care. Who is Star? Star is, of course, Diana Azeroth Ishtar, goes by those names, who is part of the Heavenly Triad Army Group made up of the armies of the heavenly bodies, I call it, of the Moon, Venus, and the Sun. Those are the military formations. These are armies, okay? So you have the armies of Nana, Ishtar, Venus, and Shamash the Sun, with a sidekick, Apollo, a.k.a. Nurgle. And now I tell you what, anybody having a relationship, a romantic relationship with Ishtar, which I nicknamed Big Jezebel, we'll find out when I get to Thyatira why that is in the next study. It's terrible at relationships. It doesn't go very well for those who have relationships. So Diana, Azeroth, Ishtar are identified as the goddess of love and sex and beauty and war, fertility, seduction, dispenser of secret knowledge, holds what is called the Tablets of Destinies, called the Mies or the Muse, depending on where you are in the country, I guess, are by the Cauldron of Knowledge in Celtic lore. I'm just paraphrasing. I'm looking at some notes here. It was responsible for war, death, glorification, adornment, giver of wisdom. Like I said, this is known as the Queen of Heaven. In some quarters, this one is identified as the Whore of Babylon, who's always virgin, always betrothed to Baal, or Baal, which is the meaning of the name Jezebel, as a matter of fact, always betrothed to Baal. Also known as the Huntress, the young warrior maiden of the triple goddess worship who took over Ninhursag's job after he was banished into the abyss to carry out the same task. That's why people get confused when they talk about triple goddess. It's all fused into one person. Actually, it's three. So, did you know occultists call her the devil's favorite daughter? And that she has a rank in that the occultists talk about. She's the Grand Duke of the Western Regions of Hell. West refers to the waters of the abyss or the abus, known as, and this one is known as the Day Demoness, the giver of secret light. This one commands 40 legions. 40 legions. And a legion is divided up in four legions, make up one army. And they have two auxiliary people they recruit from a neighboring area. So they have actually six legions to an army. So you multiply that by 6,000, that's about 6,000. So you got about 36,000 in these armies, okay? And these ain't no lightweights either. So these are babies, basically like little Jezebel spirits and stuff, if you want to go that direction. It's known as the Crown Princess, who's the guidance council for both demons and humans. And deals in human affairs and speaks very seductively, always preying on meeting and actualizing someone's human desires. It puffs up the mind, glorifies the body, and it deconstructs God's natural order by presenting all these things as wonderful and great. And to the occultist, Azeroth, Diana, Ishtar is known as the treasure of hell, meaning this one collects souls. The planet identifier, of course, is Venus. The animal icon is the cobra or the viper. The cobra is its metal that is associated with is copper. Its element identifier is Earth. I'm just reading some stuff I got from you. And this one likes to remove God's leader and mature Christians or control them if possible by bringing ruin, death, and obstruction into their lives. In other words, having them removed out of the way. And all these other upstarts can come in with all these great teachings and stuff, okay. The spirit seeks out folks who have severe fear issues of being rejected to operate out of and recruit into its ranks. That's just a brief profile of Star's, Ishtar's personal profile. So let's get back to the story. While Star Ishtar, or Star Diana, is seducing the guard, old Moonbeam Nana is noting everything down in the jail. He's noting all the movements. He knows he's a very good timekeeper. I got to tell you, he's one of the best timekeepers. He knows every movement, every time that every guard changes, every program. He knows the staff locations or where they are at the jail. He has them all written down. He's a control freak, I tell you. He knows where everything is in the jail, all the programs, where everybody will be at any particular moment on any day. He knows everybody's routine. And he plots their every step and knows every door of the joint, man. He knows everything. He makes sure that all the inmates toe the line to submit to the plan. He's a recorder, and he keeps recording everything. He's a mean hombre, I tell you. He's brilliant. He has great foresight to formulate well-orchestrated plans, really detail well-orchestrated. Everything goes into place. If any inmate does not comply, he sets in motion what is called in the jail terms the setup to have them removed from the housing area. They set them up. When in the housing area, I had to shake down entire pods, folks, to find stolen commissary through one of these setups in order to end up removing the wrong guy. But if I did not remove the guy and tore up everybody's cell, I mean, I'd just tear it up, knowing I wouldn't find any. But suddenly I found out who the instigator was, because suddenly he has a couple of black eyes. He suddenly slipped on several bars of soap coming down the stairs. It's just a little poetic justice there. But this guy, Moonbeam Nana, is very good at propaganda, let me tell you. He's a master of the art of propaganda and coded language needed to inform every inmate and all the separate cell blocks in the area concerning the details of the big bust out, because he's a control freak. He has everything planned. He spreads propaganda, but this way, folks, by disguising the plan in plain sight of the guards, by using the names, get this, of the inmates when referring to specific troublesome guards. Let me repeat that. He uses the name of inmates instead of guard names or nicknames for guards. He uses inmates' names to refer to specific guards. And through the smoke signals in the jail, they have them there. Everybody in the jail will know it. It's amazing how fast they'll know it. Through the secret code that they got, this message spreads throughout the jail, I tell you. And it fools the staff because they don't know the code, and they're led to believe that the inmates are fighting each other. And all the other cell blocks actually know the code names and what they're talking about. So everybody's on the same page on the date and time of the big breakout. So Moonbeam Nana spreads this rumor on how Brains Anu is very distant, always going to visitation. He's never around. And that someone else stole Chaos, is Timnot, Ninhursag's commissary. Chaos is sworn to get his henchmen, you know, Big Bird and his buddies, to get back the commissary. But Bubba Inlil is in on it and says out loud, that new guy, Sonny Shamesh, and Wiseman stole it. It couldn't be Brains Anu because he was in visitation that day. He's just kind of out there. He's just, we don't know where what he's doing. He's very indifferent. That was just a ploy, okay? Now, Sonny Shamesh, I just introduced to you who Sonny Shamesh is. Well, he's a good-looking chap. He's very articulate. He's musically inclined. He tells good stories. He's a great teacher. He's well-educated. He knows how to use law. He's great at law, let me tell you. And he's the muscle that makes the inmates conform to the inmate law of the jail. Thou shalt not snitch, or you're dead. And he has two friends that he rides around with to enforce this law. One is called Dark Lord Apollo, and the second is Foulmouth Debar, who can spread the plague of death with their mouth against anybody breaking thou shall not. These guys are very good with speaking death with their mouth. However, Wiseman conveniently intervenes and takes out Big Bird by having him and his monster gang tossed out of the pod along with Big Bubba and Chaos Maker by using the arrows from Sunny and Dark Lord's articulate mouths. This is all done as part of the plan to confuse the guards, who are, like a lot of researchers on this subject, think the inmates are at war with each other and pose no real threat. This is a well-trained, orchestrated, well-thought-out plan, a well-organized team who likes to play with your mind. The criminal mind plays mind games, psyops on you. If you work in a jail for any length of time and work in community correction or correction or in the sheriff department, you learn this real quick and you don't deal with it and you become a very tough guard, one they can't break. So now, in Mesopotamian lore, Anu and Ninhursag, aka Timnat, you know, Azazel, and Enlil are all viewed as outdated, and there's these young new lords need to arise. So these new lords rebel, causing Timnat or Ninhursag to send the big bird monster along with this monster gang to take out all the young gods. I'm just kind of paraphrasing this for you. But a champion steps up and takes down Big Bird and his monsters, and he establishes a new world order. That's a real simple overview of this Mesopotamian storyline here. And I've seen this play out before with deputies' names inside of jails. Not Ninhursag, but, you know, Deputy Bill and Deputy Smith. But they don't use Deputy Bill or Smith. They use inmates' name. Like, you know, Ryder and Tagalong and Buttercups. You know, they stole the commissary. And what they're doing, they have a plan. They have a plan. And in a lot of places, you just end up falling into the plan because you got to get these guys out because of the law, because of the system. You have to remove them, put them in what is known the hole, or we call it ADSEG. So meanwhile, Star Diana, back to the jail story here, has got the guard to be in on the breakout, has his car ready, cash ready for that big day. It says, oh, I love you. We will be off together if we do this together. And so, and it never goes well for those who fall in love with Ishtar, I gotta tell you. Now, Bubba Enlil, along with Chaos Ninhursag, become the fall guy. And both are taken out of the pod, and they're sent to the hole, or sent to lockdown, or sent to ADSEG. Right according to Moonbeam's plan, so the hole, as the ADSEG unit that's locked down, isolated from all other units, are informed of the breakout, that the riot and the breakout is near, because the two top dogs are down there with a few of their buddies, and now they got it organized there. And the guards don't know this. Every pod, every housing area at a certain time of a certain day is going to go crazy and go after the guards, take hostages, so forth, etc., and get out. That's their plan. Then the day arrives, the guards have been lulled to sleep, man. I tell you, they have a sleep, they're just asleep. And they never expect Chaos to even come. Because they ignored Brains Anu, who appears to be sleepy and indifferent, and he's way out there. Anu, who is Anu? Anu is the head sky god, the devil. I call him, he's one of the bull divisions. Anu and, Enlil are, I call, the bull armies, or the army group. Enki and Ninhursag are the goatfish formations. And you have the three down there, the moon, Venus, and the sun as the planetary divisions, or the heavenly body divisions, okay? Well, Anu has this plan. He wants to deconstruct God's creative order while hiding behind his buddies who will do the deed. That's exactly why I read to you Enoch there in the beginning. They swore an oath to do this deed. His plan is to kill, rob, and destroy God's existing order, creative order, along with everyone loyal to God. And he hides behind his top six commanders to carry it out. And all their chain of command. So folks behind him, like Enlil and others, you know, everybody looks at Enlil. Everybody looks at all these others, and they kind of correlate Anu and Enlil as the same, so to speak. But no, if you're training in community corrections, I'm looking at Anu, because he is the classic trait of an instigator that I had to deal with so often in that environment. And everyone pays attention to Big Bubba because he's the big troublemaker. He's just the spokesman of the bull division, Anu. And so you never notice the guy behind the curtain, so to speak. You never notice this is the one that's walking to and fro about the earth mentioned in the book of Job. You never notice this one, but we do notice his name, Satan, in the Bible. Well, that's in a nutshell. Those are the seven top dog fallen angels who call themselves gods. They're the gods of ancient paganism, and they match every other pagan religious system to a T. They all have the same storylines, names change, a slight variation in the story. It's wild. So I'm just giving you a brief synopsis of the personality profiles to help you get an idea of what exactly is going on and what they do. So you got the Mesopotamian. Seven who decree are the best representation I know of the devil's top principalities, despotic principalities that are mentioned, that Paul mentions as despotic principalities in Ephesians 6. These are the leading principalities who rule over the table of nations, the 70 table of nations or worldwide nations mentioned in the Bible in Genesis chapter 10. It's called the table of nations. It's the, and their respective chains of commands are over these 70 nations. These are the 70 sons of Noah, so to speak, who are all the nations come forth. And so these top seven command these 70. Remember, captains of 10. So you have 7 and 70 and 1 per 10. Okay, just a little math there to confuse you. And first Enoch, there were 200 leaders, captains of 10s. There's that chain of command who came and corrupted humanity. So bad, so horribly, that God sent a flood to deal with it, okay? And these 200 were first condemned to hell. Now listen to what Jubilees chapter 10, verse 1 and 2 says. And I'm going to bring this up. There it is. And it says, he sheds more light on this event, okay? This is what he says. And the chief of the spirits, Mastema, or this is who scholars have identified as Satan, came and said, Lord Creator, let some of them remain before me, and let them hearken to my voice, and do all that I say unto them. For if some of them are not left to me, I shall not be able to execute the power of my will on the sons of men. For these are for corruption, leading astray before my judgment. For great is the wickedness of the sons of men. And in verse 9, drop down there, and he said, let the tenth part of them remain before him, and let nine parts descend into the place of condemnation, the abyss, the abuz. So out of 200, guess what? 180 go to the abyss, and 10% are allowed. You have 21 players of principalities in this chain of command, and all their second, third commanders who were probably out there weren't part of it to begin with. You have a lot of forces of darkness out there. You have 21 entities there, Satan included, and the other 20. 21. Divide that three ways, and you get the number 7, right? Think about it. 7 times 2 is 14, and 7 times 3 is what? 21. And you have, so you do the math, and it matches the table of nations, all that. So these malignant ones in verse 11 were bound in a place of condemnation, and a tenth part of them were left that they might be subject before Satan on earth. And it goes on, and that tells about they were put there to provide medicine for the sons of men, okay? And healing for sons of men. I won't get into all the details. There's a lot to unpack. Don't have time to unpack those verses for you. But basically, First Nations people know what medicine means. It means a lot of hocus pocus and witchcraft and stuff to teach somebody a lesson. So I won't go into any more of that. So they were bound for a reason because the humanity was corrupt. And how could the devil carry out if all his top commanders were in the abyss? See, the pseudo-apocrypha maybe not be accurate in everything, but has enough information, enough truth in it to add to what the Bible says that puts more in light into what the Bible says. I should rephrase that. Puts more light into the Bible and puts a pretty powerful hypothesis of who Paul was speaking about in Ephesians chapter 6:12. So, you have these seven principalities that maintain control over the lost humanity with their second in commands, that equals 14. Then you have their third in command, chain in command. So you come up with the number 21. So the original seven was Anu, Enlil, Enki, Ninhur, Sag, Nana, Ayana, and Shamash, which would be, remember, Brains, Anu, Bubba, Enlil, Wise Guy, or Wise Man, Enki, Chaos Maker, Ninhur, Sag, Moonbeam, Nana, Star, Ayana, Diana, Ishtar, and Shamash, the Sun Deity. Four of these, in their own lore, in the Mesopotamian lore, for whatever reasons you can read about, I don't have time to go into it, now reside in the abyss, but they still exert influence over the earth. And that they are Enlil, Enki, Ninhur Sag, and the sun deity Shamash. This leaves Anu, Nana, and Ayana, or Diana, with the missing four, second and third, their chain of command left. Those missing four, their chain of command still there. They just took over their roles, okay? And they still exercise that. Even though some of the top, those top four are in the abyss, they still have affluence over the affairs of men. And some people have actually channeled and connected with these things. I won't get into that. It's another show altogether. So, and in the Book of Enoch, it talks about, and I forgot where it's at. I'm getting old, I guess. I can't remember. But it talks about in the Book of Enoch that after 70 generations, these ones that are 200 or the 180 that are still there are going to be released. And the top four at a point in time in the Book of Revelation, which some hypothesize are the top four commanders, I just named Enlil, Ninhur Sag, Enki, and Shamash, will be released at an appointed time. So around 2007, I'm going to just put this hypothesis out there. To this current date, there were a lot of strange trumpet sounds people were hearing in the sky, and they recorded it. This was worldwide phenomena. Nobody could figure out why people were hearing trumpet sounds. And it became an epidemic around, 2014 or 10, 14 or something around there. Maybe it was 2012 and 14. It was a bunch of these start happening all over the place. Nobody could figure them out. They had a lot of theories about it. But did you know that trumpets used to announce the arrival of kings and lords into a land? You know, you see it in the movies. But that's actually the truth. So they announced a coming of a king or a lord. So this just why maybe, possibly, I'm not saying it is, I'm just saying possibly, and I don't know for sure, but it's awful uncanny that people are hearing trumpet sounds. And if you look in light of the last 12 years or so, how the world, the entire world, the countries of the world, all of them, have fallen more in line to exhibit the works of the enemy, who deconstruct the family, who deconstruct gender, who flip gender, who deconstruct government, who deconstruct what it means to be a human with the transhumanist movement. How deconstruct life itself by mixing species one to another. 2015 or 16, they actually put a jellyfish DNA into a rabbit and had glow-in-the-dark bunnies to sell to people. Okay, really, really, you know, mixing two species, just like it says in the Book of Jasher. So with this and these trumpet sounds, you can pretty much take an educated guess at what that means. Maybe they were announcing that these old gods are back. Maybe, just maybe, that's what it's talking about. And that is what I found, folks, when studying on how the enemy counterattacks the church, to deconstruct the church in the last days and utterly dismantle its power. And there you have Jesus in the last few verses of the Book of Revelation, chapter 1, amidst the seven-headed candle menorah, examining the state of the end-time church and pronouncing in his diagnosis and his prognosis of how far this deconstruction has gone in order that the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. That's the picture. Before anytime there's judgment comes, judgment begins in the house of God first. Last week we saw that we can identify some of the patron gods of each of the seven cities mentioned in Revelations chapter 2 and 3, and how their specific personality traits are their profiles. Their personal profiles can be found inside certain aspects of the meaning of the name of each city, like Ephesus, meaning what is desirable and permittable. That's exactly a profile character trait of Ishtar. And Smyrna, I mean, who it means myrrh, it means the berry. You have the triple goddess worship and all the stuff working together, the berry, the using the power of the state, emperor worship, whatever, the power of the state to bury the church. And Smyrna was the, guess what, the persecuted church. They don't have to repent. Ephesus does, because they left their first love. They were seduced by Diana. Get the picture, and become very legalistic nitpickers, browbeaten, you know, putting everybody down, giving Christ a bad name because they left the first love of Christ. And then you have the persecuted church in Smyrna being beaten down by the governmental agencies controlled by the triple goddess worship who want to bring a sun deity back to life out of the abyss for the big breakout so he can control the world, okay, and fight against God, who in their eyes is a Tiamat, who's the chaos monster, and Anu, the father, the son, being Tiamat, and they're going to take him down. Remember, they code and talk about themselves when they talk about their enemies. And then we looked at Pergamum, who where Satan's throne is, folks. That's what we looked at last week. I hope you got some good stuff out of there, because I want to tell you, you know, there's a lot there, and I concentrated on the connecting spirit that connects to all the other gods, but called Baal or Baal-Berith. Not Baal-Bearing, but Baal-Berith of Judges chapter 9. And just look that name up and see what is the personality. Make a personality profile of them and see if you don't see those traits happening in the church, particular elements in the church. So next week, we're going to be looking at Thyatira. And we're going to see how the works in Thyatira. So until next time, you're going to have to wait for that, because I'm going to be closing down now, folks. Because, you know, just go back. I know this was kind of maybe boring for some people, or maybe informative. I'm just trying to get the folks who don't know this type of stuff very well, how to understand it and put it together when they read this stuff. But I also want to say, in these last days, these old gods are back. These fallen angels are back. They're on a counterattack. And we see it in social media today, you know, where you can't upload or live stream, or you get banned for having the name Christian in your organization from ever showing. And conservatives' voices are being silenced as well, like Dennis Prager and some other people who have. So, with that, remember to join the Renegade Nation, where you can still get cutting-edge stuff just like this, and even better than what I can teach, folks. Who can beat the Christian contrarian? I don't know. I just fall down and go, oh, my. That guy, I love his book, Genesis 6 Conspiracy. I mean, I tell you, you just can't beat the Christian contrarian. You just, his knowledge base is just, wow, amazing. So when you want cutting edge stuff like the, Seth has on the Apollo Engineering with his great interviews, and I hope to get some of those folks that he interviews on here, because I would love to talk to them about some of this stuff. So folks, just stay tuned. And plug into the Renegade Nation and join for $10 a month, $100 a year. All you have to do is hit the link below and you will get it, folks. Folks, all we can say, folks, is this before I end is, God bless America. We all say that, don't we? Don't we? We all say God bless America, right? But did you know that America needs to bless God? I have this flag behind me here because some people asked about this flag. I did some other live streams before this, and they wanted to see this flag that I mentioned. This flag flew in Washington, D.C. My father worked for the National Capitol Parks. He gave me this flag. It was retired, and he gave it to me. Had some frayed ends. I had some friends. Eventually we washed it. We took care of the frayed ends and perfectly restored this flag so it can fly again. I can't remember exactly, but this may have flown over the Capitol or it flew over National Park headquarters. I don't know what. It has a lot of history in it. When this flag was flying in D.C., they were burning it down during the race riots. They were burning it down during the Vietnam protests. That's how old this thing is. And so I have it up here to honor our country, to remember that America needs to bless God. How can America bless, how can God bless America when America needs to bless God? Think about it. Well, this is the Christian Marauder signing off, and hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day and a wonderful evening and a wonderful tomorrow. In Jesus' name, amen.